So, friends, here I am again, almost at the one but last chapter in number 12, the most interesting chapter in the whole book. Why I'm calling it interesting is because here we are talking about the purpose of writing this book is about learning and development, the learning part of it. Now, when we say learning, we are actually talking about what is covered in this particular chapter, moving from training to performance consulting, Now, this is a state of art. What we are discussing here is a state of art. Let's see how it flows. Introduction, training versus performance consulting. These are two terms which we will be discussing now. Organizations have been for too long focusing on training as a process of skills building. Of late, training is getting replaced by performance improvement facilitation. What's the difference? The difference between the two is training focuses on any one or two aspects of the employees, which leads to performance improvement. On the other hand, facilitates covering all those human factors that affect the performance into consideration and administer a series of interventions to bring about the performance improvement. The sentence is too long. Okay, I'll explain to you in simple terms. Training is focusing on one or two aspects of the employee. He may have to go through a conflict management workshop, or he may want to go through a team building workshop. Two aspects. That is as far as the employee is concerned, and for his division or the department where he comes from. And this will take care of a performance with respect to those two attributes. Once he becomes a person who can handle conflicts, once he becomes a person who's a good team player, then that part of the performance will take care of it. But what about the overall performance? So there's a need to increase the overall performance of a person in every aspect of this working. At the individual level, departmental level, division level, and as a whole organization. So this is what this particular chapter is discussing about. Training. In the 1990s, many training functions shifted from a focus on training to one on performance improvement. This shift required some trainers to partner with line managers. Line managers are the HODs of different departments for the purpose of improving on-the-job performance in support of business goals. So there was a time when the trainers like me used to just meet the HR person. The HR person had some sheet of paper in which the HR requirements, training requirements came from the concerned department, and they used to tell us this is the thing you need to do. People like me used to ask more questions and get some answers. I used to insist those days when I started training that I want to meet the concerned departmental head, the line manager, to know more. But that was not given to me and many trainers because the line manager was not involved in the training process. Today, the HR person and the line manager both interact with us. The line manager is a person whose subordinates are coming for the training to the training program. So he knows the real situation that he is facing every day. HR also knows it, but HR knows it as told to them. But line managers is taking the thing every day. So both of them sit together and then they give us the inputs. So the shift is requiring trainers to partner with line managers for the purpose of improving on the job performance in support of business goals. For trainers to make this transition, they had to reallocate their time and become more proficient, knowledgeable at conducting performance analysis and implementing solutions. So our role has shifted from mere behavioral training into behavioral training that is focusing on performance improvement. So when I'm taking a training, I have to ensure that this input, these exercises are going to impact the performance of the employee, of the division, and also of the organization. So that's a macro picture to which our trainings are now anchored. That's where performance management has come in, right? At the same time, training departments were redesigning the process they used when supporting line managers, clarifying roles of performance consultants and others in the department, providing tools and techniques required for performance improvement, and developing the skills required for those in the departments. So gradually the transition took place. The training department and the HR people themselves went through the transition. They went through training within the company to know how the various line managers operate, how marketing operates, how production operates, how logistics operates. So they spend some time to know why they do what they do. That is very important. A marketing person's way of communicating will be different from the way a production person communicates. So we can't have one yardstick to measure all of them. So these HR people started getting familiar with that. As a matter of fact, what I've observed in many companies, people from a line function were eventually transferred to HR department because they made the best HR people. When you come from a line function where you're dealing with people every day, people, emotions, objections, conflicts, on a day-to-day basis, you are the best person to know human behavior. Right? Not that HR people are not into that. HR people also know it. But the line manager knows exactly where the conversion is happening or not happening of resources into finished goods or services. So this role has now become an additional role which many HR people are playing now in many companies. And the training manager particularly has to be very much, he must keep a ear to the ground. He must exactly know which department needs what type of a process, what process that they have, and hence what type of a training required for the performance to jump. So the role is transiting into a much more bigger role, which is as good as a consulting role. What are we doing in a consulting? In a consulting, we try to understand the larger picture and then we try to give them some advice. So there are times, there are organizations where I'm seeing the HR department is acting as an advisor, a consultant to the other departments. Because the HR person who's sitting there is a person who's knowledgeable about the various processes, having handled the processes himself or herself. Today the transition into many HR of many people who are experienced enough, they go to HR so that they add more value. That's again one's choice and paradigm of thinking. Okay, next. In performance consulting, it's also sometimes referred to as high performance consulting. It's a sub-discipline of consulting that seeks to understand and develop a holistic strategy to change performance. Holistic means overall, all interconnected strategies, like a systems approach, right? Thoughtful planning and commitment to the transition enables the performance consultant and the performance department to be viewed as a strategic business partner to the management. Smart trainers know that they must continuously be alert to the winds of change that are blowing within the field of expertise and the organization that they support. If I am conducting a training in an IT company, I have conducted trainings in IT company for so many years, similarly for pharma companies and also engineering companies. Now, what I did 10 years back was a training, maybe before that, facilitation. And then as the industry transited, as the economy of the country itself transited, their needs are different. They've got technology now. Their own product mix has changed. So with these changes and with the introduction of IT, which I discussed in the earlier chapter, now they are looking at a larger picture. So they want trainers to be much more savvy than before. So a trainer like me has to go through the transition to read about companies, read the changes, meet people, discuss with them, because they are my stakeholders with whom I am directly interacting. So a training which I did say 10 years back in an engineering company, in the same engineering company, I do the same training, the same theme is given today. It's coming with a larger picture, not with that small picture which was there ages ago. So today trainers have to be ambivalent. They have to be looking at the larger picture, 360 degree picture, and then put their training. So the training module that is created is taking all these factors into account. It's not just a training module of one single slot and you finish with that. No, it has got a cascading effect on the performance of the company itself. That's how smart trainers operate today. They ought to be quick to identify the forces that impact their profession, the trends initiated by these forces, the future state towards which they must transit, and the road to travel to reach that future state. That is performance consulting. The rationale or the logic for this new way of thinking is the realization that no single solution, whether in the area of training or human resources or process redesign or any other area, will produce a significant improvement of the performance problem, because rarely is a performance problem the result of a single cause. I mentioned this in one of the earlier chapters, that only training doesn't bring about a change. Although I'm a trainer, I don't want to start being very partial and talk about it. But if I look at myself as a consultant, performance consultant, then I would say that there are a number of factors which are all systems linked, which actually create the performance change. So it makes a lot of sense for any progressive organization to move from the paradigm of just training or even a change in a group of people in a division or something to the larger picture. If I have to bring about a change in a division or a department by putting them into training, then that has to have a performance consulting type of a flavor. It can't be just done in isolation anymore because there are too many related factors. The most significant factor is companies have become global. Global need not be big brands and big names. There are small companies also who are suppliers or business partners with large companies. A very small company which is supplying ancillary components to an automobile unit, large automobile unit, is also into performance consulting today. That's very important. The company size is not mattering. It's the attitude. It's the way the company looks at it today and for the future. Okay? So single solutions are woefully inadequate. Factors that brought a shift from training to performance consulting. How did the shift take place? While some within training were involved in performance improvement activities, some of us were into this for a long time back. So we used to be told by the HR people that why do you have to bother about that department? This, why do you want to meet those people? Do this and, you know, be done with it. The paradigm that was not required actually at that point of time largely. But some of us felt that we should add more value because we were little looking at it from a visionary point of view. In the 70s and 80s, it was not until 1990s that the shift picked up momentum. Two somewhat different but parallel forces propelled the shift, which continues even today. One was a change in business. One of these forces is a dramatic change taking place in the business community. The globalization of business generates intense competition with organizations needing to utilize their manpower much more effectively. Thus, management is more willing to examine various avenues for unleashing potential of the workforce. In other words, people are gaining more competitive edge. Also, the skills requirements of the workforce are increasing in response to rapid technological changes. We know this, we are all part of it. More sophisticated equipment and more complicated work processes require more competent workers. Look at this statement. More sophisticated equipment, more complicated work processes. Try to relate it with your day-to-day functioning. Require more competent workers. A simple example I can take. There was a time when mobile phones were launched, we had the crude mobile, if I can call, we use the word crude. That big phone, which was like a walkie-talkie, and the punch, we had to punch it with our fingers, and it was not soft keys, you know. And then what happened? It became more sophisticated. We got the soft pads. We got the QWERTY pad. The phones gradually became smartphones. More sophisticated, more complicated work processes were inside that. Okay? And the smartphone slowly became touch phones. And it's progressing now. And there are many things that have happened today. The iPhones came. And so many things have happened, right? Now, you will agree that your own behavior has to be more competent. The last term I'm using. Competent means if I have an iPhone with me or an iPad, which is the most sophisticated, like many, it has got certain complicated type of things which I may not understand what is lying inside the iPad. I need to be more competent than before to use it effectively. The same thing is applicable in industry. Automobile unit 40 years back is different from an automobile unit today. Today in the automobile unit, it's highly sophisticated. It's robotic manufacturing. The work processes are, I won't use complicated, they are very specialized. And the workflow is running in a certain manner, different from the time when I started production in my first job. And naturally, those people who are manning it, they have to be more competent. They have to be much more competent than what they were 10 years back, 15 years back, 20 years back. So today we have a highly competent workforce, and hence performance consulting plays a major role. Simple. So when I walk into an automobile factory like Mahindra's or something, I notice that the same workers whom I saw 20 years back, today they are different in their outlook. They are very much savvy on many areas and they continue to learn. And that's where performance consulting plays a major role. In the period between 1981 and 1993, the number of workers receiving formal training increased by 45%. Some statistic removed from some source. Okay, but the idea is that we are trying to say that the formal training started increasing. That means people were given classroom training. They were all asked to add more value to themselves. And it became a way, it became one of the key result areas which they had to go through, right? Dissatisfaction with training. The other main force driving change in the field today is the growing dissatisfaction with training activities and the lack of results from training. I wouldn't blame training alone. If you say that I have to do only training, I'll do only training. Then why blame training if it's not producing results? If you give me the larger vision, then I'll train as per the larger vision. So there was a thing that was not okay in terms of organization themselves not understanding that they need to do a broader picture. So there were times when trainers like us used to tell them, look, let's go for a broader thing. They say, no, this is a budget. See, the budgetary allocation, the top management's view towards training, everything was very, very narrow. They did not think in these terms because the forces were not so turbulent as it is today. Today, when the forces are turbulent, it has become a need. So now they are realizing what we told them 15, 20 years back. Several factors that drive this growing dissatisfaction are more financial resources being utilized with visible returns being lower than expected. This is one of the things that there is a major complaint. We are spending a lot of money, no changes are taking place. And these are because of various reasons which we have spoken about in the earlier chapters, right? Second, while training costs continue to rise, there has been little or no discernible improvement in the results from training. This is something which, an accusation. Most of the investment in organization T&D seem to have been wasted because most of the knowledge and skills gained in the training have not been fully applied by those employees in the job. Again, there are various reasons which I've already enunciated, I've already spoken about in the earlier chapters. So, in short, what is happening is the training, we are spending money, time and resources, and what is happening is no changes. Training by and large has got a bad name with certain people. They say no, training doesn't help. They feel so. Because the context is not really understood, that is why this is happening. Finally, line managers in most organizations see the training function as an expense rather than added value. In addition, those in the training community have been unable to demonstrate clear value because the results of training activities have had little impact on job behavior. Very few trainers, my colleagues whom I know in this community, they are able to relate a training into a change in behavior into performance. Very few of them can do it. You need a little bit of a larger vision rather than thinking the training is all about delivering something, creating a behavioral change in the training room and then following up with the changes of the behavior. It's not behavior alone. The behavior has to be connected with the performance. And then the performance is not about the individual, it's about the organization at large. That type of vision is important. Okay? These major forces have prompted the innovators within the training community to shift to a focus on performance improvement. Some progressive people in the training community, they said, no, let's look at the larger picture. Training can't be bad because we are spending a lot of time, vision, reading, understanding people into creating the training module. It can't be bad. Those efforts cannot go wasted. They have to have some pathway. So let's look at the larger picture. Then we see the larger picture. We realize, yes, it's an overall performance for which we are doing the training. That realization has come today because of the forces from outside, the global forces, the rapid changes, the technological leaps, right? And so now we are validating the fact that yes, this is required, performance consulting. This shift goes far beyond improvement in the technology of training. For example, improvement in needs assessments, gap and cause analysis, and the selection of solutions. Instead, a shift on how the training function works with the line managers is required. So there is a partnership between the various people who are involved in the training. Earlier on, in one of the earlier chapters, I have spoken about how five agencies have to be congruent. The top management, the line manager or the supervisor, the trainee himself, the trainer, and finally the HR person. the training manager. Now, all the five need to be congruent. Now, this need for congruence and the direction, the action towards the congruence is happening today because of performance consulting. In a performance consulting, these five agencies have to be aligned with each other. It's happening today. Okay? So, there's a lot of meaningful value addition which we as trainers are able to give them. Right? It's very exciting. Now, here is a comparison given. Okay? So, you can read through it. I'm not reading it because it's too small in terms of fonts. Just go through it. I'll pause for some time. Read it and then I'll proceed to the next one. The points are given on both sides. One is on the training part of it. The other one is on performance approach. Okay. This is also there in the textbook. You can go through it. So now I'm proceeding to the next slide. Partnership with management. What does it mean? The most dramatic change associated with the shift into performance has been the manner in which trainers, now called as performance consultants. In many companies, when they issue a letter to me, they call me a performance consultant, not a trainer. They work with line managers. Today, we are working with line managers. Recently, just about before the COVID started, I've done a performance consulting intervention for a major pharma company in Mumbai. And there I had met a number of people, not just the HR people. I met a number of people, line managers, stakeholders, before the training to know exactly what would you like to have on the 2 days when I was delivering it to the senior managers. It made a lot of impact and validation to me as well as to them. So before I entered the training hall on the day, appointed day, we already knew what we are into. And then the question answers became easy. And what I had to deliver, I delivered. It was done smoothly. It was a highly satisfying job. When a trainer does his job and the top management and the whole company benefits, it's the most satisfying moment for the trainer. Not just doing one small job and coming away. No. That's where we are today in terms of performance consulting. Previously, trainers had operated either as experts or a pair of hands. Chalo, something has to be done, so call this trainer. He's good in this. Call this trainer. Pair of hands. Like calling a plumber or somebody. Sorry to say that. Okay. Or they were seen as experts, PhD in some psychology or something, and they come there. Now, both these are not bad. I'm not saying they're bad. The point is that if your attitude is looking at them as experts or just a pair of hands to do something, then you are actually missing out. The organization is missing out on people like us. The expert approach resulted in training functions determining what courses would offer, the content of those courses, how the courses were delivered, etc. Pair of hands means what? The trainer implements a request from management. Management says, do this. In many companies, they give you a sheet of paper. They say, this is a training, deliver it. Don't ask questions. Pair of hands. Now, this is what used to happen ages ago. In some very short vision companies, they still do it. Okay. Now, however, trainers operate as performance consultants. They initiate and develop relationship with the key managers within the organization over a period of time. The consultants become knowledgeable about the business of the business. This is a very interesting term. I put it in inverted commas. Business of business. What's a business? A business is a core function with the company is into. Business of the business means how that is done, how the core functions are done. What are the human dynamics? What are the things that matter in the short term, medium term, and long term in terms of human behavior? How do the groups function? Are they functioning consistently? Is there a harmony? Because groups keep changing their moods from time to time because of various reasons. They are impacted by changes. Now, all this is very complex. It's a multivariate ambience we are talking about. Everything is variable. But one needs to have the skill to manage these things. The consultants become knowledgeable about the business of the business. And while interfacing with the management, they use business language. So today, consultants, training consultants talk about turnover, ROI. They talk about, you know, PBT, that is profit before tax. So we have to get familiar with our balance sheets, etc. Since I come from an industrial background, 18 years I've spent. For me, it's very easy. I'm still in touch with industry so many years. This may not be possible with everybody. So that bit of tweaking, that familiar part of it, one has to do as a trainer, right? Because you have to know other areas other than only your core areas. That is very important in today for all walks of life, not only for training. Okay? Performance consultants are quick to respond to requests and they alert management when training alone is not appropriate. I do this very often with my clients. Something is happening. Seems to be okay, but something is not going to happen in the future. So I got to tell my training manager of the company, look, this is what is something which we need to address. And both of us sit together. Then he asked me why. He asked me a lot of questions. It need not be the training manager alone. It can be other stakeholders. So we have this frequent review meeting, especially when I'm doing a 12-month intervention, leadership intervention, or a 6-month intervention. Then we have time for debriefing and we meet the stakeholders in between. Then they tell us, okay, let's do this, let's tweak this, let's put it in this way, that way. So we keep on doing course correction, course alteration. In fact, research indicates that effective performance consultants spend majority of the time forming, building, maintaining relationship with key managers within the organization. This itself is a key to a training. Today, when you start maintaining relationships, you're in constant touch, you get huge amount of inputs, and the training process becomes very easy. You know exactly where to facilitate. Previously, both the training function and the line manager saw training as nice to have. Good. 2 days of training, nice to have. Go for the training, come back, and now back to the work, back to the old behavior. That is why training had a very bad name. Okay? For example, managers might feel that interpersonal communication training would enhance the way people work together. But they would expect little or no impact on business results. Okay, go for a communication workshop, come back. But I don't think any changes will take place. This was a implicit thinking, unfortunately. However, performance consultants will use this for performance improvement. They say, you went for a communication workshop. How is it impacting your work? Improved in communication. They'll ask the people with whom that person is daily working. They'll check out with the stakeholders outside, the external customers. Is there an improvement in the performance? Is this person using communication inputs from the training program and improving his or her communication and producing results? This is being tracked today. This is being mapped today. They first clarify the business need and how management measures the achievement of the need. Once this business goal has been defined, the performance consultants work with the line management to answer the question. What must people do better or differently if this business goal is to be achieved? A very popular question which I ask and the popular answer I get, I said, what is it that you want people to do? They said, we want them to be better. I said, define better. In performance consulting, one of the most important thing is you must learn the answer should be connecting the intangible with the tangible. Let me repeat. The intangible should be connected with the tangible, which means if a manager is telling me, if a training manager is telling me, I want my people to be better, then I have to ask him a question, what is better? Then he'll give another thing, because many times people are into generic talk. I said, better as in what? In performance? Yeah, performance. What performance? I may be talking about logistics people perhaps. So what is logistics performance parameters? What are the measurables? Now he has to probe and understand that this is what it is. Now when he said better, that better may not be that. It may be something else. This is where the calibration comes in. So I must be very clear about what is better for him. Then he says, then both of us arrive at a certain sync, S-Y-N-C. To know that this is where we are. Once this is clear, then we know. Then I have to ask him a different question. I said, what is it that if they do differently, the business goal will be achieved? That's what is written in the slide. What is it if they do differently, the goal will be achieved? No, these people are loitering in the afternoon after the lunch break. They should not loiter. Okay? So if they don't loiter, you think they'll do better work? Okay, if you think then without loitering they come and sit in their seat, they'll do better work. What if they don't work? No, they are supposed to work. What if they don't work? So such type of inconvenient questions have to be asked in the beginning. The more inconvenient questions you ask, the more clarity you're creating there as well as with you. And then you get a clarity about what is to be done. At the end of it should come with very positive intention to make a difference for the larger purpose of the organization. Okay? This is not to provoke anybody into something negativity. This is just to make them realize that let's have a clarity about what we are doing, because at the end of it, we must be effective, you and me and the whole organization. This ensures that the performance improvement effort is linked specifically to the achievement of identified business goals which are measurable, right?